From WHQR Public Media, this is Reeducation Nation. I'm Logan Kennedy. This program takes a deep dive into the heart of public education. We talk to the people doing the work, from teachers, superintendents, school board members, and beyond. We want to get their perspectives as we go into the first full school year under this Trump administration, which has made its aspirations of ending federal education programs and removing federal dollars abundantly clear. How do these changes affect students, teachers, faculty, and local school boards? All in all, you're just a brick in the wall. Joining us today is Ms. Angie Smith-Kahane. She is a social worker, and she has over 25 years of doing advocacy in New Hanover and Pender County, centered around school safety and mental health. She also does work for Sokoto House. And what do you do there?
I am a community health worker, violence prevention specialist, and I am their outreach coordinator as well.
So, Ms. Kahane, you've been around for a long time in social work, and you work mostly with youth, correct?
Yeah, correct.
So what are you seeing? What's your take right now? You know, we are in times where we see a lot of shooting violence, mass violence. Of course, there is the social media pressures and peer pressures. What are the things that you're seeing right now with youth in the community?
So many different things. We've seen the climate of our schools, like, change drastically, especially over just the past couple of years. And so we do see a lot of violence in school, a lot of bullying. There's a lot of drug use. Self-harm is a big thing going on in our schools. And so I think all of these things are kind of interconnected, because we're really at a time where we're in a mental health crisis, like, even outside of our schools, like in the community. But knowing that, so many of those services are being cut and so many of those positions being defunded.
Federal funding and
yes, very
like
much
that.
So. Yeah, and it just trickles down, you know. I know there are programs that lost their state funding, which then means the federal government won't match those funds there either. So, so at a time when it's really crucial to have those proactive services, we don't really put much money or even attention on the mental health field or anything that's proactive.
And it's the worst time to do that.
Absolutely.
Because it's needed the most.
Absolutely. And we're definitely very quickly seeing the fallout of that as that just happens.
I know it's not so much of an easy answer, but what are some of the factors that you think are leading to what many are saying, a mental health crisis in America?
I think that the fact that we are more like in a reactive state as opposed to like a proactive state in our country as a whole. I mean, when you look at what we invest in here locally and nationally, it's largely reactive. So like when we have something catastrophic happen, like with the shooting in Southport, like we get a lot of attention and we have conversations and then we talk about resources, but it's kind of too late then. And so I think that's what happens in our schools and our community, is that the focus there isn't on all of those things that we know are preventive. And then that leads us to, like, being in a crisis situation. Like, I know in this county in particular, we invest largely in law enforcement. I mean, that's our largest contract in the school system. We have the largest contract in the state.
Wow.
But when you look at our mental health services and our student support team, we just cut, like, our social workers in schools drastically. And even before they were cut, they couldn't even do social work. They had to focus on truancy because there's just not enough of them. And then, you know, we have guidance counselors who have caseloads of over 400 kids. That's impossible to do case management for.
So in the public schoolhouse, would you say a lot has changed as far as how they're able to work with students and treat students with mental health issues who are dealing with that?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I think that we saw, we were optimistic and we saw a little bit of a trend there, maybe about like 3-4 years ago, where in response to the multimillion dollar sexual assault case, we thought we were going to be able to get some services back, like that were proactive, that were, you know, preventive, that were, you know, trying to resolve issues and keep those things from happening over and over again. But then when we had a shift in leadership that took like a drastic turn, like for the worst. And so, yeah, I think.
And that's at the county school level.
At the county and also at the state level as yeah. well. I mean, North Carolina doesn't value public education as a whole, unfortunately.
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that. You're not the first person to say that on here.
Yes, it's a very, I mean, it's a popular thing. In fact, we do have lots of advocacy groups that are trying to like help there. But yeah, it tends to like fall by the wayside. And so I think that, you know, we've seen our unhoused and even our students go up. We've seen, you know, suicide rates and self-harm and just violence on campus like increase drastically over just the last couple of years. And it doesn't really look like anything's being done to bring that back down.
Yeah, on the suicide and the school violence, I have a study here. This is from the Jed Foundation. So they've put together from the CDC right. and Trevor Project, John Hopkins Medicine, and some other resources that suicide is the second leading cause of death for teens and young adults. So I believe the first is car accidents.
Right.
And then for children, it's the number one cause of death right now for children in America is gun violence.
Yeah.
It beat car accidents. It beat childhood cancer. Overall, 20.4% of high school students reported having seriously considered suicide in the past year. 41% of LGBTQ individuals. And then 12.3% of adolescents aged 12 to 17 had serious thoughts of suicide. And this one, when I was looking at this, it took me back for a second. Overall, 9.5% of high school students have attempted suicide in the past year. Almost 10% of high school students. Now, Mr. Kahaney, with your knowledge, with your background, with your experience, what the hell is happening where 10% of our high school students have not even thought about it? They have taken the action to try to take their lives.
Wow, that's it's kind of a multifaceted question. And answer. I'm like saddened but not surprised to hear those statistics. I know that there seems to be this there's a lack of communication and a lack of connection in our schools and in our communities and between our communities and leadership as well. And so, I am a conscious discipline instructor. And so conscious discipline is a social emotional learning curriculum. It's evidence based. Do it even all over the nation, even outside of the United States. And we've seen like schools and communities be very cohesive and safe as a result. And so these were things that a few years ago were widely welcomed and, you know, we were getting support for these things and we were seeing like positive results. And I think, of late we've shied away from that. And I think that comes from the turmoil in the political climate and where, you know, right now that's just not even something on the table for conversation. There's largely denial about those statistics that you just said. I mean, in this very county, we have had students that have died by suicide. We have students that are on our radar all the time for self-harm. I mean, we see the bullying and we see how even like, you know, with the cyberbullying and cyberstalking, how the bullying even surpasses just what people may think that it looks like in the regular school system. A lot of like our drug problems are kids self-medicating because yeah. of it's traumatic to go to school, you know? I mean, and that doesn't even take into consideration all of the unrest and just like stress and anxiety that comes with the violence of lockdowns and, you know, like learning how to respond to the potential like mass shootings and things like that. And so we do some of that, you know, like the fear-based interventions, but like the communication to really like speak with kids and kind of like get valuable information from them. We don't provide those opportunities. And then we sure don't, there's a disconnect between parents in the community and then larger systems like the school system or the juvenile justice system and things like that. And I think that's like a factor too. So I guess like I see the things that maybe some other people don't see that aren't in the school system, because our elected leaders very rarely walk into the schools and they very rarely walk into the communities that are struggling with food insecurities and housing and things like that.
Even though they're the ones saying to the people on the ground and in the schools the most.
Absolutely.
That they know.
Exactly. And they have the potential power to change it. I mean, they impact the policies. They're largely responsible for policies that have been changed in the last couple of years in particular that encourage bullying and encourage self-harm and things like that. So the fact that they don't know and don't really seem to care to know is a bit problematic.
And what are some of those things that you say encourage it?
Well, we have seen just some of the policies in the last 2 years are absolutely absurd, you know? I mean, things where they've gone to extra great lengths to just take inclusivity and diversity and equity. That whole attack has been really quite dangerous. You mentioned the LGBTQ plus community. And I would say, while all of our marginalized communities, their risk with those children, and certainly we want to provide support, I would say that the LGBTQ plus students are specifically under attack, like have a bit of a target on their back. Just from the kids and the families that I work with, dramatically in terms of suicide, self-harm, and even being unhoused, you know, like all of those things seem to impact them more. And so some of the policies, you know, that the schools have implemented of late, you know, not allowing anything on the walls in the classroom, not allowing kids to like express themselves in certain, you know, in any way, not allowing conversations to happen. We just settled a multi-million-dollar lawsuit for sexual assault. And one of the things that protects those kids is Title IX, which is a federal law. And so we put things in place for prevention. That was a part of the settlement. And the school district has purposefully not done those things. So I think when you're making policy and when you're not following laws, that's problematic and creates a lot of like what we're seeing in the schools right now.
You're taking down the guardrails that have been put there.
Absolutely.
From experiences already learned, yes. Steps we have to take, and you're right. Taking it away.
Absolutely.
And then you're saying, now, why is this happening?
Exactly. That's so true. I mean, that's exactly it. And not only that, but almost inviting it, because when kids see adults like openly being hateful, and I mean, some really horrible things have been said on public record from, you know, leadership saying against LGBTQ kids, against, you know, even kids in marginalized communities as a whole. And when those kids hear that, but these are the people who hold the power, like, that's disheartening. It's scary. It's exactly not surprising that we get what we get.
And you have to look at it, because the show inherently isn't political, but you still have to look at your political climate. And you can look to other countries. You can look to Ireland during the Troubles and everything that's happened there. That's why they have very high alcoholism.
Yes.
We see this in other places. And I'll say, you know, you're talking about people that represent mm-hmm. us as a population, leadership over us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have a president right now who was convicted of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Who is a felon, who has, you know, said degrading things about women, about the LGBTQ community. And on what you said about more marginalized areas, rural areas, to add this, 43% of LGBTQ. That's nearing half. Mm-hmm. Half of all LGBT, and that's counting trans too, because, I mean, that's a whole nother side to it.
Yeah.
43%. That's horrifying.
Yeah, really, it is.
And the violence in the schools. I got the statistic on school shootings, and this is just wild. CNN reviewed incidents reported by the Gun Violence Archive, Everytown, and Education Week. Mm-hmm. This started in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2008, we had 18 annual school shootings. 2009 was 22. And then 2010, 2011, 2012, it stayed about 13. 2013, it was 26. 2 years after that, it jumped to 37 just about each year. 2016, it was 51. Then it kind of went back down, lower 40s, only the lower 40s, right?
Right.
2019, 52. During the pandemic, most of all schools were shut down. We still had 22. And then after the pandemic, 2021, 74%. Up from the highest of 52 in 2019, 2021 is 74%. 22, 80. 2023, 82. 2024, 83. And so far, 53. There have been 53 school shootings this year.
Wow.
And that was, I don't remember getting 53 notifications.
Yeah.
And you know what? How do you report on that many?
Yeah.
You look, you know, you think a school shooting would take up your whole day. You'd hear about it everywhere. Yeah. 53 in 1 month of schools being back in.
Yeah.
And 50 of those all-time shootings have been here in North Carolina. We're actually one of the higher for states. So on the only one that kind of beat us, you know, we're on level with Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Louisiana has the highest, as well as, I believe it's New Jersey. What are some of the factors? Because, of course, these guns have to come from somewhere.
Right.
A student has to get to that state to want to harm other people.
Right.
If you're talking to parents, what are things that they can do that they need to look out for, even though it's a tough thing to think about your child doing that?
Right.
What are the warning signs?
I think that, first of all, I think that, you know, when you say those numbers, to me, they're horrifying. But again, not surprising. I think we're very desensitized now to where, you know, I mean, I'm thinking back to, like, when Columbine happened. Like, the world stopped for a while. I mean, we still talk about that, you know. I mean, there was a lot of attention. There was a lot of, let's look and see, how did we get there? Like, how did that happen? And we don't really do that anymore. I mean, we move very quickly on to the next school shooting. And sometimes you don't even see any media coverage at all. I think it's something that makes people uncomfortable, and they don't like uncomfortable. And I think it's also something that people like to stay in denial about. I have parents, I work, you know, with children and their families, and I have parents tell me all the time, like, I don't need to know all that you know about what goes in the school, because I don't think I could send my kid there if I did. And that's scary to me that, you know, we send our kids to a place that's terrifying to us as adults. I mean, I don't know. I just, like, it definitely is uncomfortable, but it's necessary to have those conversations. I'm of the mindset through, you know, just like through the work that I've done, through being a parent myself, that all acts of violence are preventable. Like, there are all kind of red flags out there every single time we look at those things. But what one of the things that we've stopped doing is even looking. Like, people don't want to hear that there's a mental health connection. You know, people are either blame the guns, blame the system, whatever. But coming together and having, like, these, like, conversations to come up with, like, solutions, there's a hesitancy to do that. We don't get a lot of information. I know here locally, the district, and when I say the school system, like, there's a very big difference between the district, which is, you know, like, superintendent and, you know, all of the senior staff kind of thing, and then your actual student-facing positions. But the district doesn't, they communicate what they want to parents. So there's violence that happens every single day on our campuses that parents don't even know about to be able to have that conversation with their kids.
When things have to lead up to that.
Absolutely.
Things online. You know, that's a big thing. I know Columbus County Schools, just East Columbus High School, where I was going, I only graduated in June. And I think, because they were trying to make an example, but it wasn't a bad example. I believe 6 students were arrested or charged that year. And this is even middle school where they're charged for communicating threats online.
Wow, yeah.
And serious threats, saying there's a bomb here, saying there's a gun here, saying, you know, this person, you know, recording them, recording them in the bathroom.
Right.
This is the kind of stuff we have going on. Now, I believe all public schools in North Carolina have adopted the new policy, bell to bell, no phones at all.
Yeah.
And you laugh at that. And do you think that proposes more issues? Because leading into that, I was talking to a principal in Columbus County Schools. You have some students who don't talk to a single person in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, if it's that situation, it's not a good situation at home. So they wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. They get on the bus. They go to school. Nobody talks to them. Nobody looks at them. They go home. They go back in the room day after day after day.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have that.
Right.
And so if you take the phones completely out, does that open up another door? Because maybe you have some students, they want that as a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
If they can call somebody, if they can text somebody, they're already being ignored in their environment.
Right.
Just taking the phones away, does it do more harm than good?
Yeah, my answer is not going to shock you because absolutely. I mean, I will 100% agree that there need to be some parameters in the classroom when, you know, teachers are teaching and that sort of thing. Like, I'm not a proponent of having kids on their phones all day during, like, education. But realistically, it just seems really dangerous to me. I mean, I think that when we're talking about, like, what we know of, like, threats online when we do have threats of violence or, I mean, there has been many a times in this county that we've had students – put something online that indicates that they may hurt themselves or someone else, that information comes from students. They're our lifeline. So if they don't have their phones, how can they be our lifeline? Like, one of our biggest prevention programs in the county and all over the country is See Something, Say Something, where we trust.
Like, we
encourage kids. We say, like, you can even do it anonymously. Like, share information with us. Like, if you see something, if you're wrong and we, you know, check it out and it's fine to be wrong. It's better to be safe than sorry kind of thing. But how does that even work if they don't have their phones? You know, like, I have students who they depend on Snapchat to tell them when there is a fight in the breezeway or a fight in the stairwell. And that way they know to avoid that area. I mean, like you were saying, I have kids that, you know, Lainey has 2,400 kids. Like, they have 4 lunch breaks. And, like, if you don't have someone on your lunch break with you, like, that can be, like, your support person, that can be really scary and really quite dangerous. Yeah. So I do have kids that at lunch, they use their phone as a distraction. People are less likely to taunt them and bully them if they're just distracted by their phone. So I get it that there are some negative things. I mean, certainly social media can be a dangerous place to be. I mean, we see a lot of bullying happen there, but we also see some really positive things because we wouldn't know a lot of the information that we do know if it wasn't for social media and if it wasn't for phones. So I just think to completely eliminate either one of them, and that's where that no cell phone policy came from the governor, is this whole war with, like, Facebook and social media, and that kind of got wrapped inside of that. And so there's this quest to, like, eliminate both, but that's not going to happen. You know, you just can't.
It goes back to, you can't just take away everything. You can't destroy everything.
Exactly. And why aren't we using that, again, as a way to connect and communicate with our kids and teach them how to appropriately use those things?
I want to use the last part of this program to specifically talk about sexual violence. there's a lot of conversation in this country and really in the world right now. You look at the case of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, one of the at least most well-known sex trafficking cases in this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sex trafficking and sexual violence is at egregious all-time highs in this country and other countries. What do you want to say on that? What needs to be in people's minds when it comes to sexual violence and when it comes to things that we've seen in our local schools? What are people, I'll say, what are people not hearing about?
You know, we sometimes make national news, and the sexual assault scandal is one of those things that New Hanover County was front and center in the news for. And so, you know, I've been like a longtime advocate for victims of sexual assault since I got into the field. And certainly when that case came out in the open of Michael Kelly, where there were, I mean, we had well over 20 kids that he sexually assaulted. And he was the teacher of the year. And, you know, he was someone that was kind of put on this pedestal. You know, kids and teachers trusted him. And they really, you know, that's something that I guess is just really troubling to me, is like how public it was and how many people had concerns about what was going on. And those concerns were just like swept under the rug, and this went on for decades, you know. And so I'm, you know, going to applaud Ben Shockman for being like, when, you know, he was with Port City Daily at the time and just helping us to get that out when we first learned of that case. And but I mean, the response was like, that can't even be, like, that just sounds absurd. Decades of like sexual assault inside of our schools. But it was. And I mean, he confessed. And
do you recall how many victims?
So all
at least that are known about.
Yeah, for sure. So on the first civil, there's actually a second one ongoing, but the first civil case that took us close to 5 years that I was like a part of, you know, from a therapeutic standpoint with like the victims, was close to 5 years, and then we had 14.
If a parent out there believes they've seen something, whether this is violence, whether this is drug activity, whether this is sexual violence, what is something that they can do?
I would say, first and foremost, try to educate yourself on the 9,000 policies that the schools have out there. That's easier said than done. So there are lots of advocacy groups. I mean, I have parents reach out to me multiple times a day about things they're unsure of in the school system. So I would say find those community partners, find those advocates that you know are trusted. And just try, I assure you that, like, we will help you, like, navigate that system.
Ms. Angie Kahaney, social worker, school safety, mental health, and sexual violence advocate, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Reeducation Nation with host Logan Kennedy is a production of WHQR Public Media. It's recorded at WHQR Studios. This podcast series is made possible by a grant from the Fourth Estate Fund.